Looking at our world from a theological perspective. This is the Theology Central Podcast, making theology central.
Good morning, everyone. It is Friday, November the 26th, 2021. It is currently 10:43 a.m. Central Time, and I'm coming to you live from the empty sanctuary of Victory Baptist Church, located right here in Ovalle, Texas. And we've got to talk about a very important subject. For a very, very long time, I have found myself becoming more and more frustrated with a large segment of American Christianity. I don't know how widespread this happens outside of America, but here in the United States of America, for a very long time, I have been bothered, at times angered, outraged, depressed, discouraged with the American church and its acceptance of conspiracy theories, and not just an acceptance of conspiracy theories, becoming the promoters of such theories, promoters, defenders. Dare I say that many within the American evangelical church have become better evangelists for conspiracy theories than they have for Jesus Christ. They have become more committed to defending, promoting, spreading, and sharing conspiracy theories than they have with, I don't know, preaching the gospel of Jesus Christ, calling people to faith in Jesus Christ. It is absolutely astonishing to me how not only has this been going on for such a very long time, how it seems to be getting worse and worse and worse. You think at this point, Christians would have abandoned all of their crazy conspiracy theories and said, you know what? I became distracted. I became a follower of conspiracy theories instead of acting like a follower of Christ. I've become an evangelist for the conspiracy theories instead of an evangelist for the gospel of Jesus Christ. You think that there would have been a reckoning, a time of repentance, a time of spiritual awakening that Christians realized what they had done. But it to me, it's getting worse by the second, getting worse by the day. And sadly, I don't see it getting any better. Now, let me just go through a brief history of my frustration with American Christianity and conspiracy theories. I won't go all the way back. I started running into a lot of this craziness in the late 1980s. I was a brand new Christian, started seeing it a little bit. All right. Just saw it a little bit. I'm like, how did we fall for this? How did we get so caught up in this? But I will allow a little bit of leeway and forgiveness for things happening maybe in the 80s and the 1970s, the 1960s, the 1950s, the 1940s, at least to this level. It was much more difficult at that point in time to verify something, to get correct information. Now, this is a double-edged sword, but back then, if you heard something, you were like, you either relied on the person telling you, or you thought, okay, my pastor is going to be speaking the truth from the pulpit. It was very difficult in many cases to go verify. You would have to maybe go to the library, try to find books on the subject. You just couldn't grab your phone, like I got my phone right here, and just grab it and start going, okay, let me find the information. So I can at least allow a little bit of understanding that, okay, there was a lot of crazy ideas floating around, but it was very hard to verify. But you could still do some verification in the 1990s, early 1990s, still way before I think I even, you know, had the internet. So, you know, it was definitely way before the internet became ending up everywhere. And that was my phone dropping. I was putting my phone on the floor because when I mentioned my phone, I looked at it and like, oh no, my phone's, it's going to start giving me all my podcast notifications because I subscribed to like 1,000 and it's always giving me notifications. I'm like, I better drop the phone on the floor. So I say, I don't want you to try to think that there's some grand conspiracy going on here behind the scenes. But okay. So in the 1990s, this is early on, I remember being in church and my pastor at that time was making some crazy comments and claims about the Promise Keepers ministry. right? I mean, he was going off. Basically, Promise Keepers was the work of Satan that was going to destroy bring the church to an end. I mean, it was crazy. And he made lots of claims. And I was like, I just don't believe that's true. I don't believe that's true. So my wife contacted by phone the Promise Keepers ministry. And we were like, that's not, and they were like, no, that's not true. That's not true. And so we confronted him. Now he gave an apology, but it was almost like, well, there's some people here because I said, like almost in a mocking way, instead of just saying, man, you didn't have your facts straight. You lied. You misrepresented. You basically were selling a conspiracy theory that wasn't true. But even though that was the case, most people didn't care, even in the church, most people, and the pastor didn't really care. It just, like, basically his view is we were overblowing it and making it a big deal. I'm like, no, speaking the truth from the pulpit, I don't know. I mean, look, pastors are going to make lots of mistakes. Pastors are going to fail. I understand that. But just trying to ensure that before you make some claim, you make some accusation, you get the facts right. But that was in the 1990s at that time. Some interesting things were happening in the culture. I don't know if you remember this, but at that time, there was a program. It still airs on the radio today, and you can subscribe. Well, you got to pay to subscribe to their podcast. But Coast to Coast AM, the host back then was Art Bell. And, oh, you talk about a program that was all conspiracies. Man alive. Craziness from alien abductions, Area 51. I mean, just every, I mean, you could just go on all day. Bigfoot, I mean, ghost, there was nothing they wouldn't talk about. And let me tell you, it was entertaining. At that point, really at the kind of the, as it was really starting to become this cultural phenomenon, early on in that, I was security forces for the United States Air Force. Right. So I would be out on a flight line in the middle of nowhere, what's called a whiskey post, a little bitty building, sitting in there watching a fence, a part of the flight line, ensuring that if someone, you know, breached the perimeter, came over the fence, then, you know, you've got a gun, you do whatever you have to do to stop them. And it, depending on where they go, okay, I won't go through all of my job, you know, all the details of my job, but you know, security forces, right? Carrying a gun, guarding different things pertaining to the flight line or different things to the military base, right? Or working the gate, checking IDs, ensuring no one gained access to the base without proper identification. You get the basic idea. Well, when you're out there in a whiskey post and it's 1 o'clock in the morning, I mean, there's nothing. I mean, you're just in a little bitty building by yourself and it's pitch black. But oh, if you had a radio, you tuned in to Coast AM and it was, you talk about keeping you engaged and entertained. Oh, it was fun. And so everybody would talk about it. And I think for the most part, at least at that time, I didn't realize how many people were taking a lot of those conspiracies extremely seriously. I just thought it was, okay, what craziness is going to be talked about tonight? I didn't take any of them seriously. I didn't believe any of them. I viewed it like more like a just entertainment. But there were people out there like, you know, keeping track of all of them. And it was just, that was like the building, at least in popular culture, of a lot of people embracing lots of, let's call them alternative facts. Let's just say a lot of really confused ideas and theories. And I at the time, I just saw it as fun. I didn't see that this was the beginning of a cultural way of thinking. But then, at that same time in the 1990s, not only did you have Coast to Coast AM, you had something starting to air on Christian radio programs called the Prophecy Club. If Coast to Coast AM was crazy, well, Prophecy Club was frightening. And the reason is Coast to Coast AM, that's a secular radio program. Okay, who cares? Who cares I didn't care what crazy conspiracy theories the world thought about. That's outside of Christianity. They may not even deny that truth is absolute. They may hold a form of relativism. Who cares if they tell the truth? Who cares what lies they share? Who cares? But, you know, at this point, you still thought the church would never embrace such craziness. Of course not. But then the Prophecy Club started airing, and I'm like, wait a minute. In many cases, the Prophecy Club was taking it. I'm not saying they were doing it on purpose, but many of the crazy ideas that were being thrown around in some way, shape, or fashion on Coast to Coast AM was showing up on the Prophecy Club, but they were being now put into Christian terminology, that this is happening, that the New World Order is coming, and that the church is going to be, and all of these horrible things were going to happen, where, you know, the Antichrist was about to come, we're all going to die, and this is the end of the world, and you better do something now and send them $25 to get their VHS or DVD of their latest, you know, program about these very important issues. And I would listen to the Prophecy Club, and I thought, okay, this is crazy, but this has got to be, I mean, nobody can buy into this stuff, right? Right? I mean, no one can. And then I'll never forget, off at Air Force Base, Strategic Command Headquarters, we're in there, and we were having to put up some, I can't remember exactly what we were doing. They were placing guards somewhere where we're setting up some kind of a perimeter barrier. I don't know exactly what we were doing. I don't remember all the details. It was a long time ago. But I'll never forget the person who, the one of the security forces members who was working like the main entrance there to where people came into the Strategic Command Headquarters. He said, he looked at me and he knew that I professed to be a Christian, and I didn't know a lot, like we weren't like best friends or anything, but we had a basic, we'd run into each other and work together enough that he had a basic idea that I claimed to be a Christian. And he looked at me and he's like, you know what's going on, right? I'm like, what? And then he starts going like full blown, like the Antichrist. I mean, it was like straight word for word from the Prophecy Club. And I was like, wait a minute. Here's a fellow believer who has so bought into all of this. How is this happening? But I still didn't think it could become that widespread. So now we jump to the 2000s, right? The 2000s. And I start a podcast way even before they were called podcasts. I'm basically doing like a recorded radio program, the best way you could do it, where I'm looking at what's happening in the world from a Christian perspective, talking about the news. And all of a sudden, I started realizing these Christians believe some insane things. I just started seeing, like, because now the internet's all over the place, and I started seeing all these Christian articles about this and about this. And then you have the rise of Alex Jones, you know, really becoming prominent at this time. And I started finding out how many Christians were listening to Alex Jones. And so then I would, and then this was on Sermon Audio. I started paying attention to what was going on Sermon Audio, and I started listening, and I'm like, these people, There were pastors straight up promoting every crazy, whacked out conspiracy theory in the world. That, let's say, if you got the flu vaccine, they were putting microchips in you, and this was getting you prepared for the Antichrist. So do not get the flu vaccine because it's got a microchip in it. I'm like, wait, what is going on? And then when Sandy Hook, the horrible shooting that happened at Sandy Hook, there were Christians saying that it wasn't real. There were crisis actors. And I'm like, wait, what is going on? And then, especially during the Obama administration, I can't tell you how many conspiracy theories I heard coming from Christians that he's getting FEMA camps set up. They ordered, you know, 10,000 or 100,000 body bags. They're getting ready to start killing people. We're getting ready to be going into FEMA camps. He's a Muslim. He's going to institute Sharia law. He's going to take our guns. He's going to shut our churches down. And I mean, it was crazy. And time again, I was turning on the microphone going, no, that's not true. That's a conspiracy theory. There's no proof for that. That's inaccurate. And I, all of a sudden, I started realizing I'm spending all of my, it basically became like a full-time job of trying to argue with all the craziness within Christianity. And I'm like, why are Christians buying into this? Like, why are they buying into this? And I'm skipping thousands of, not thousands, I'm skipping a lot of other examples. But it was just like, what is happening? And I could not figure it out. And just baffled by it. And then you jump up to 2015, you get the going into the Trump administration. And it was like, the conspiracy theories just kept getting bigger and bigger. And then you have the rise of QAnon, and it's just craziness. And again, involving the evangelical Christian world, just saying absolutely insane things. And then when the pandemic began, oh, the conspiracy theories were everywhere. And I've constantly been fighting against it. And let me make it very clear. My fighting against it I'm fighting against conspiracy theories, not outside the church, but inside the church. I don't care if the world buys into 9 billion conspiracy theories. They need salvation. They don't need their conspiracy theories fixed. They need salvation. That's my concern. They don't have any concept of absolute truth. They're doing whatever is right in their own eyes. But once it comes inside the church, there's a basic principle. There's some basic principles that Scripture gives us. Put away lying and speak the truth to everyone. That's like a basic principle there in the New Testament. The Old Testament tells you do not bear false witness against other individuals. So I don't care how much you may hated Obama being in the White House, you had no right to bear false witness and make up lies about him. I don't care how much you may hate the Biden administration, you have no right biblically to make up lies and share false information about him. That is wrong. Speak the truth, put away lying, do not bear false witness. These are like basic Christianity 101, but for some reason, the church seems to have so much trouble with those basic concepts and not only traffic in conspiracy theories, they jump into the ocean of conspiracy theories and bathe in them, drink them, bottle them up, and share them and become evangelists for the latest conspiracy theory. And I know that's a quick overview of all of my different times of being involved with it. But I mean, there's so many different stories I could tell you, but it's just been a crazy journey and I've never understood it. Like, why? Why does the church do this? Why does the church do this? Now, I'm going to throw out a hypothesis here. I'm going to throw out a theory here, right? Not proven. See, it's one thing to say, I have a theory, but it's not, I don't have any proof. That's one thing. But when you put forth a theory as fact, that's not true. Now you're getting into lying. So here is my hypothesis, my theory. And I don't have this completely worked out yet, but I'll explain how I got to this. I'm going to give you the theory and then try to take you through how I ended up here. It's really weird. What happened was, I'll tell you what happened and then I'll give you my theory, right? I don't know when it was. I was listening to a podcast. I don't know what time it was, where I was. And I was like, wait, this is interesting. And then all of a sudden it clicked. Wait, there was just a study released that I think relates to this. And so I'm going to put two different things together and you can tell me what you think. Here is my theory. Here's my hypothesis. Is it possible that the church's rejection, I'm going to call it a full-blown rejection of the sovereignty of God, is that the ultimate reason the church has embraced so many conspiracy theories? Is the rejection of God's sovereignty the soil in which conspiracy theories are planted? Now, you may not know, you may not understand this. Just stay with me. And when I say the rejection of God's sovereignty, many Christians will say, oh, I believe in God's sovereignty. And then you keep waiting and you wait for the but. And then when they start talking, you're like, no, you don't really believe God is all sovereign. You don't believe God works all things according to his good pleasure, his counsel, and his will. You don't really believe that. Because even when they handle certain biblical stories, they have a way to almost remove God from the story, and because they are rejecting God's sovereignty, because to acknowledge God's sovereignty over and in everything, and that God works all things out for his purpose and his will, and that we have God's providence and God's eternal decrees, when you start rejecting that, or you don't have a good theological foundation, I think that makes you vulnerable. That becomes the soil which you will plant conspiracy theories for an explanation to what may seem confusing and fearful. I think people turn to conspiracy theories because they've rejected the sovereignty of God. I think there's at least some truth to this. I cannot be dogmatic, but I will explain how we got there. So here's what we're going to do. We're going to go to a podcast. This episode aired, I guess it dropped yesterday. I got the notification again sometime last night. And I started listening. I'm like, wait. All right, they're talking about conspiracy theories, specifically medical conspiracy theories, which is very relevant to the whole COVID situation. And that medical conspiracy theories go way back. I think we're going way back. Basically, conspiracy theories have existed as long as human beings have existed, which theologically started getting me to think, because they go way back and they make these claims that basically conspiracy theories has been around as long as people have been around. And I'm like, okay, wait. I think I know what's going on here. So we're going to listen to this. They're looking at it just purely from a historical, secular perspective. Of course, everything I listen to from a theological perspective. That's probably why I'm a host of a podcast called Theology Central, because I want to make theology central. So we're going to listen to this, and then once we get their basic premise down, we'll stop this, and then we'll go to this article, and we'll put the two together, and hopefully by the time we're done, you're going to go, wow, never thought of that. Or by the time we're done, you may go, wow, you're a complete idiot. Someone needs to come up there and take your microphone from you. And I know that some of you may already think that someone needs to come and take my microphone away from me, but you're going to have to pry it out of my dead hands. Okay. All right. I'm joking, but you may not see this as a wow, some kind of revelation, some kind of epiphany. You may not see it, but I think there's something here to think about. And I'm going to say it again. I think the rise of conspiracy theories within the church happened as a result of the rejection of a true theological understanding of God's sovereignty. I could be wrong, but hey, we've got to be willing to ask questions and put forth ideas to really advance in our understanding, because someone's got to explain what in the world's going on in the church, right? And I've offered other possible reasons for it, but I've never entertained this idea, right? So here we go. Let's listen. We're going to go to the podcast first, and I'll be interrupting this a lot. Here we go.
This is an ABC podcast.
There are those with an interest in wild and wacky conspiracy theories. They include utterly unsupported claims that the virus is a result of 5G exposure, a mass depopulation project, or a ploy to vaccinate people with a tracking microchip. There are many more besides. As in other crises and debates, social media has enabled false claims and conspiracies to race around the world.
Since the outbreak of COVID-19, people around the world have been trying to answer the question, where did it come from? But this isn't the first time people have turned to conspiracy theories in an effort to explain a medical mystery. Hello.
Now, before they go any further, this is not the first time people have turned to conspiracy theories to explain a medical mystery. Now, I want you to realize this is going to start going. Their hypothesis is the reason people turn to conspiracy theories is because when they face something they don't understand, they look for a way to explain it. And if a conspiracy theory gives an explanation, they would rather have some kind of an explanation than uncertainty and mystery. I've talked about this a lot of times. Many people, they prefer certainty over truth. Some people prefer certainty over truth. They want certainty. They don't want questions. They don't want doubt. They don't want confusion. That's why some people hate the way I preach, is because I will ask questions in order to create confusion and doubt to try to figure out the truth. But no, just give me certainty. Give me 3 points. Give me an answer. And when people throughout history have been confronted with, well, that doesn't make any sense, I don't understand it, but dun da dun da da, conspiracy theory, we've got it all figured out. We know exactly why. We know exactly how come. And what's so depressing is some of those conspiracy theories that they were talking about, COVID and 5G and microchips. I played for you a Christian podcast that said, it's hard for me to even believe that I heard this on a Christian podcast, that the COVID vaccine injects nanobots into your body, right? And then those nanobots go through your bloodstream And at some point, when they turn on 5G the right way, it's going to activate those nanobots inside your bloodstream, and it's going to take over and basically make your will be willing to submit to the Antichrist who will be revealed. So the whole COVID thing is a hoax. They want you to get vaccinated so they can put nanobots into your body. Then they're going to activate those nanobots using 5G, which will then make you submit to the Antichrist. The way you're going to be controlled by nanobots. And so basically, by taking the nanobots in a roundabout way, you're taking the mark of the beast, because you will submit to the Antichrist and be eternally condemned. Literally, I heard this on a Christian podcast. Absolutely the most insane thing I've ever heard. And that's just the beginning of the craziness that they go on there. That's literally, like, how can that be spoken by anyone who claims to be a follower of Christ? How could anyone get so far down the rabbit hole that that's where they are? Now, and they will offer very little proof. Or proof that's highly suspected, or in many cases, just absolute lies to try to promote their theory. And you're like, wait a minute, you're a Christian. You're supposed to be committed to the truth, preach the truth, defend the truth. And you're not to bear false witness and make false accusations. Do you not have a conscience? Are you not grieved by what you are doing? But no. They will double down, triple down if you call them into question. Now, I look. There's people out there running around who are not Christians, like, COVID vaccine. It's gonna put something in you that's gonna be controlled by 5G, and it's got a microchip. I don't care what the world's saying. Again, I don't care if it's on Coast to Coast AM. I care about when it's on your local Christian radio station, or if it's on a Christian podcast, or even worse, being preached from the pulpit of your church, or it's being spread in small groups within your church. Then it becomes a church problem. It becomes a theological problem, and the church has to address this. So this is a secular podcast, and they're acknowledging all of these crazy conspiracy theories, but their claim is the reason people turn to them is they will, in a sense, remove uncertainty with conspiracy, because they need an answer. Already right there, you should see where this is going theologically. You should see where this is going. My theory, I think, now starts making a little sense. We should never have to replace uncertainty with a conspiracy, because we don't have uncertainty, because we know all things happen according to God's sovereign will, his sovereign plan, according to his eternal decrees being worked out through his divine providence. But how many churches do not have in their doctrinal statement something that sounds like the London Baptist Confession of Faith or the Westminster Confession of Faith in their sections on God's providence or his eternal decrees? And many churches that may have that in their doctrinal statements, the people, when they start talking about what's going on in the world, don't sound like people who've been, in a sense, taught doctrinal truth about God's sovereignty. They sound like that they're just like the other people in the world. And that's where the church has got it all wrong. But let's continue through this.
Hello, I'm Zoe Ferguson. And in this program, we'll be looking at the history of various health and disease-related conspiracy theories and what connects them through the ages. So what exactly is a conspiracy theory?
A conspiracy theory is a theory in which a small group of powerful people are working in secret for their own benefit and against the common good. And they're doing it in a way that undermines our bedrock ground rules against the widespread use of force and fraud. Now, interestingly, conspiracy theories are conspiracy theories and not conspiracies, because the appropriate knowledge-building bodies haven't determined that these theories are, in fact, true.
Now, let's make sure I have to stress this, because I get emails sometimes going, I don't know how you can't believe in conspiracy theories, because the Bible talks about conspiracies. Then people conspire together. People conspire together all the time. Listen, if you can prove that a conspiracy is occurring between two or more individuals or two or more groups, between whoever the groups may be, no matter how big or small they may be, and you can prove it dogmatically with factual information, That's one thing. That's a conspiracy that needs to be exposed. But until you can prove it with dogmatic facts, you're trafficking in conspiracy theory. The problem is, many cases, many of the fact-gathering groups who would have some authoritative thing to say, you claim it's part of the conspiracy, so you reject any information that counters your conspiracy, and then you say, well, my conspiracy is true, and if you any information you give me that goes against my conspiracy, it's part of the conspiracy, so then you end up in this crazy bubble that you can never get out of, this circular reasoning, and then you only rely on information that comes from within people who already believe in the conspiracy. Or her promoting it. They have the correct information. Everyone else is wrong. So you have no ability to do actual fact checking, verification check. No, you don't. You just fall into this rabbit hole. There are conspiracies. There are conspiracy theories. If you don't have facts, and you've got to make sure you check facts and verify, getting from multiple sources, you got to be able to verify something. If you can't, all you're doing is trafficking in a theory. So then it becomes a very important theological question. Should a Christian run around promoting trafficking in theory when what the world needs is not theories? What they need is the gospel of Jesus Christ and the fact of the incarnation of the eternal Son of God who came to die to save people from their sins. That's not a theory. That's a fact. What should we not be trafficking and preaching fact, not theories? The world doesn't need more theories. They need truth. But see, what happens is whenever you criticize something like, oh, you're going to call it a conspiracy, that they think that anytime you criticize something, you call it a conspiracy theory, it's just because you reject it. It's like, no, because there's no evidence promoting your nonsense. Or you've put forth ideas where there's gobs of other information to call it into question. And as soon as I get certain emails, I know, like they'll make like 500 accusations. And I'll be like, do I even engage in this? Because as soon as I send any information that doesn't agree with them, they'll be like, I reject your information. I reject it. It's wrong. My information is right. Your information is wrong. Like, well, wait a minute. If we've got contradictory information, shouldn't we continue to gather information and see if we can get a consensus? They don't want a consensus. They've got their conspiracy theory, and now they believe that to be a fact. So I just want you to see that there are conspiracies. If proven, they need to be exposed. But if it's a theory and you're just trafficking in unproven theories that you may never even be able to prove, is that what you should be doing as a Christian, or is that nothing more than a distraction? And actually, when you're running around defending and promoting conspiracy theories, guess what you're not doing? You're not preaching and teaching Christ. And what does the world need? The Great Commission isn't to go forth and put forth your latest theory. It's to go forth and teach, baptize, and teach to obey. It's really not that complicated, but all right, let's continue.
That's Joe Uzinski.
I am a professor of political science at the University of Miami.
He's the co-author of American Conspiracy Theories and editor of Conspiracy Theories and the People Who Believe Them.
There are numerous conspiracy theories about health, and they've been around for a long, long time. Particularly in the United States, there's always been this feeling that there are secret cures out there that are being hidden by either the government or by pharmaceutical companies. There are views that there are natural cures out there that are really cheap, but they're being hidden because the medical industry would much rather sell us much more toxic, but also more expensive, quote unquote, cures.
Despite popular belief, conspiracy theories aren't new. They've been with us ever since humans started wondering about the world around them. But
now, I'm going to get 900 emails going, no, there are cures out there. And okay, look, if you hold into any of these, I'm not here to argue about conspiracy theories as far as which ones you hold to and which ones you want to prove. I'm here to talk about why you hold to them and the origins of them. Please note what she just said there. The conspiracy theories have been around since basically people started wondering, human beings started wondering and asking questions about the world around them. So here's human beings. They start looking at the world around them. They need to explain what they don't understand, so they turn to conspiracy theories. For a Christian, we never look at the world around us and go, I need to understand it, because we have at least a basic understanding that everything that happens around us comes from the sovereignty of God, which then changes our entire worldview. But if you reject the sovereignty of God, either in theory or in practice, then you become vulnerable to conspiracy theories. That's my theory, and I'm going to continue to stick with this as we move forward. But let's continue.
First record we have of a health-related conspiracy theory takes place in ancient Rome.
In 331 BC, before the Common Era, in the city of Rome, we're told that citizens were dying of a plague.
That's Dr. Victoria Pagan.
I teach at the University of Florida in the Department of Classics, and one of my main areas of research is conspiracy and conspiracy theory in the ancient Roman world.
The historian who recorded the story of this plague in 331 BCE was named Livy.
He says that, I'm about to tell you a terrible story. I wish it weren't true. This is the sort of thing that I really don't like to report. So you get this very reluctant sense from the historian about this plague. And leading citizens were dying, and they were showing symptoms of this same sort of problem, and they were dying, and they took it to be a plague until a slave woman came forward and said that she had information about why this was occurring. And she said that she knew that women of a class above her, not slave women, but women of a propertied class, were preparing poisons. And that if they would follow her, she could bring them to the women poisoners and bring this problem to light.
And so the officials go with her.
And she brings them to the women that she said were preparing the poisons. So two of the women said, no, no, these aren't poisons. These are actually very helpful remedies. There's no problem here. So the informant said, then if they're so healthful, you should drink them. And when they drank them, they died. And they were then shown to be part of this ring of women that were preparing poisons. And according to our historian, there were about 170 women that were involved in this poisoning ring. So this should bring an end to the problem. And they were brought together and punished. But just to make sure, the Roman officials said, we need to take one more precaution, which is an old practice of what they call driving in the nail or affixing a nail. And this was a very ancient practice that was meant to ward off insanity and madness and derangement that would come over the people. So they elected, just for the moment, a dictator, because Rome didn't keep dictators around, but when they needed one, they elected one. So they elected a dictator to drive in the nail, and he drove in the nail. And that, according to Livy, is the end of the story. He drove in the nail, he gave up his dictatorship, and life went on as normal after that.
And we can draw a thread from ancient Rome to today. And that's why conspiracy theories are created in the first place.
At the root of any conspiracy theory is an absolute abhorrence of the possibility, even the remote possibility, that we are at the mercy of chance or of fate. And that sometimes bad things just happen. And that rather than understand it that way, we try to find reasons. So they're always driven by a deep desire to have a reason, so that we can feel more in control of our circumstances. And so,
okay, now I want you to hear that the driving force behind conspiracy theories is an absolute abhorrence of the idea that we are just victims of fate, that there's just fate out there and bad things just happen. No, bad things can't just happen. Someone's got to be responsible for it. Someone's got to be doing it. There's got to be a group. There's got to be a re. It can't just be no. There's got to be a re. There. It can't just be a random school shooting. It has to be a school shooting being done as a false flag so that they can then take our guns. It can't just be a pandemic is happening and people are trying to come up with solutions to try to save lives. No. It's not a real pandemic. It's a fake pandemic, and they're doing it so they can shut down our churches, so that they can wipe Christianity out of the face of the earth. It can't be that just someone is a president. No. It's a president who is going to put us all in FEMA camps and kill us all. In other words, it can't be just a president is elected that we don't like. That president has to be elected that we don't like for evil reasons, and he's there to kill us. Everything has to be seen as for anything bad or anything that we don't like. It can't be because of fate. There's got to be a grand conspiracy behind it. Now, I can understand why the world would do this, right? They don't want to believe in fate. They're not going to turn to God. So they reject God. They reject fate. They've got to have an explanation. But why would Christians fall for this? I think it's going to come down to the rejection of God's sovereignty. You'll see that in a minute. I'm going to back that up one more time, because those are some, this is so critical to my whole understanding here. All right, I'm going to go back. All right, here we go. Listen to this again.
Fate. And that.
Okay, I didn't go back far enough. All right. See, it's a conspiracy. It's not that I just didn't go back far enough and it just happened. No. It's a grand conspiracy. And Satan probably is trying to stop me from letting you hear this. Okay. Well, we can get into that whole. Yeah, here we go.
This should bring an end to the problem. And they were brought together and punished. But just to make sure, the Roman officials said, we need to take one more precaution, which is an old practice of what they call driving in the nail or affixing a nail. And this was a very ancient practice that was meant to ward off insanity and madness and derangement that would come over the people. So they elected, just for the moment, a dictator, because Rome didn't keep dictators around, but when they needed one, they elected one. So they elected a dictator to drive in the nail, and he drove in the nail. And that, according to Livy, is the end of the story. He drove in the nail, he gave up his dictatorship, and life went on as normal after that.
And we can draw a thread from ancient Rome to today. And that's why conspiracy theories are created in the first place.
At the root of any conspiracy theory is an absolute abhorrence of the possibility, even the remote possibility, that we are at the mercy of chance or of fate, and that sometimes bad things just happen, and that rather than understand it that way, we try to find reasons. So they're always driven by a deep desire to have a reason so that we can feel more in control of our circumstances. And so it's much easier to find a reason for something in a group of people that are basically marginalized, whether it's by status, class, gender, race, whatever. Anybody who's marginalized can then become a target for the explanation that we seek that would make us feel safer than if we were simply at the mercy of chance.
Fast forward to the 1300s, and we see the same thing happening.
Part of the explanations that were put forth for the plague in the 14th century were that Jews were poisoning wells, and this was part of a roaring anti-Semitism at the time that was already alive and well in the community, but then with the plague made it very easy to say, well, here's a group of people that are responsible for this. And it was very easy to do because it was already a group that was being targeted.
This pattern repeats itself through the ages.
Okay, so you see the pattern happening. Bad things happen, something goes on, okay, there's got to be a reason. There's got to be a conspiracy. There's got to be, and we got to blame someone. This has been going on throughout human history. Now, we could argue that first and foremost, it's it arises from our depraved nature, that our depraved nature has no problems lying and making false accusations and bearing false witness. There is truth to that. But I think there's something deeper going on here that they alluded to in this podcast episode. I know they were looking at it from a theological perspective. But when you start mentioning fate and chance, well, now you're getting ready to cross over philosophically into a theological discussion, because as Christians, we don't believe in fate. We don't believe in chance. So because we don't believe in fate or chance, we believe that all things work together by God for God's purpose, right? He works everything according to his pleasure, his good pleasure and will. He works all things together for our good. Right? We could get into that whole discussion in Romans 8. I won't go back through all of that right now. But since we believe that, we should have a different perspective. But listen to this. Few Americans. Now, you may not see the connection here, but just listen, right? This was an article that was published on November the 25th, yesterday. Right? Here we go. Few Americans blame God when bad things happen in their lives, according to a new Pew Research Center survey that looks at how people respond to suffering in the wake of a pandemic that has killed more than 750,000 Americans. So we're facing what over 750,000 Americans have died, just Americans, from the pandemic. But they don't blame God. They don't blame God. This is ultimately somehow a rejection of the sovereignty of God. Just stay with me. The survey of adults, this happened in September, shows that Americans overall have a strong belief in God, or say that sounds good. They have a strong belief in God, and that belief appears to be unshaken in the midst of hardship and suffering, such as have occurred with COVID-19 virus. So they believe in God. And even though bad things happen, that belief is not shaken. My question is not do they believe in God, do they believe in his sovereignty? No, continue. Here we go. Instead, many Americans lay blame for the suffering that occurs in the world. Are you ready for this? Here we go. Listen to this. This is where the revelation comes in. All right, here we go. So many Americans, and when I say a revelation, not a divine revelation, we're getting insight here. It's a revelation to how we should understand this. All right, here we go. Many Americans lay some blame for the suffering that occurs in the world at the feet of individuals and societal institutions. 71% of Americans agree that suffering is mostly a consequence of people's own actions. 69% said suffering is mostly a result of the way society is structured. More than half of the respondents said both of these statements describe their view. People tell us they think a lot of suffering is just a part of life, said Gregory A. Smith, Associate Director of Research at Pew Research Center. A lot of suffering is caused by people or systems people have created. Although questions about the source of suffering in the world are new to Pew, the center has previously polled Americans about belief in God, heaven, and hell. And those beliefs, 91% said they believe in God or in a higher power, 73% believe in heaven, 62% in hell, are remarkably consistent with past studies. One third of the respondents also believe in reincarnation, and that too has remained stable over time. When they hear about terrible things happening to people, most Americans said they feel thankful for the good things in their own lives, and said for those who are suffering, 62%, 10% said they were happy for others suffering because they deserved it. Okay, that's kind of messed up. A quarter of Americans said that when they hear about bad things happening to people, they often feel the need to tune out the news because it's just too much to take. But American views of God are largely forgiving. More than 70% of Americans said they rarely or never feel angry with God for allowing terrible things to happen to people. All right? And then, so they go on here and talk about it. The bottom line is most of them, and I could go through most of them, God is not responsible. The bottom line is they don't see God as being responsible. God, they don't blame God. They're not bitter at God. They just somehow God is out of the picture. Now that sounds, you may think that that sounds good. You got to stay with me here. You may think that that sounds good. You're like, well, great. They're not bitter at God. They don't blame God. That's awesome. But if they don't see God as being responsible, this creates the vacuum. Well, if God's not responsible, in other words, you're almost rejecting that God works all things out according to his goodwill and pleasure, then where do they start blaming? Individuals and institutions. This becomes the soil that's very fertile and ready for you to plant the conspiracy theory that looks for an understanding of what is going on. Well, this is happening because, again, and you just look at the way it works. Why is COVID happening? Well, it's fake. It's created and it's being done to take away our freedoms. When a shooting happens, why did that shooting happen? Because it's a false flag. Someone carried that out in order to take away our guns or to take away our freedom. Why did this occur? Because they're trying to destroy this. There's always some grand conspiracy behind it because people cannot tolerate that it could just be fate. They don't like fate. But they don't want to blame God. Their idea of God is God would not do these things. So God's not responsible. So it has to be someone else. And this way of thinking even creeps. Well, not only does it creep into the church, it's manifested itself in the church in so many different ways. Let me give you an example. When we read the book of Job, all right, I to this day, I don't understand why Christians don't struggle with the book of Job. They's like, oh, it brings such great comfort. I'm baffled by the way many Christians handle the book of Job. But when you read the book of Job, let's make it very clear. We have an individual. Horrible things happen to that individual. Horrible, horrible things happen. There is death. There is destruction. There's economic ruin. There is problems with his health. It is a horrible, devastating story. And a lot of people say, well, see, Satan did it. Slow down. No, God did it. God controlled the entire situation. He's the one who brings Job up. He knows what Satan is going to do. He allows Satan to do it. God begins the situation, controls the situation, ends the situation, and never even bothers to explain the situation to Job. You can't get God off the hook there. God does it. And just think about everything that happens in our world from a logical perspective. In the beginning, when I open up my Bible, I read, in the beginning, God. The first thing I'm introduced to is God. God is there. And then I find out as I read my Bible, this God is all powerful. This God is all knowing. But then he does, in the beginning, God created. He creates. Well, he creates being all knowing and all powerful. So everything he creates, he knows exactly what's going to happen. He has the power to stop it from happening. He doesn't stop it. He allows it. He knows it. And it occurs. God is sovereign. Let me give you very important scripture, Ephesians chapter 1, verse 11. I'm going to read it from a number of translations. Ephesians 1, 11. In him, we are chosen, having been predestinated according to the plan of him who works out everything in conformity with the purpose of his will. New Living Translation. Furthermore, because we are united with Christ, we have received an inheritance from God, for he chose us in advance and he makes everything work according to his plan. God works everything out according to his good pleasure and his will. I could read it from a number of other translations. It's going to say the same thing. Now, if I believe God is working everything out according to his good pleasure and his will, now, do I feel the need to try to come up with some grand conspiracy to explain that which I do not know? No. Now, listen to me. I'm not saying that when people are involved in bad that they should not be called out and exposed. They should be. But just remember, we don't feel the need to always explain a reason for everything. We don't have to go, well, okay, COVID is going on because it's a grand conspiracy to shut down the church. Or COVID is going on because we live in a fallen world God is sovereign, and somehow in God's sovereign plan, this pandemic is a part of his ultimately eternal decree. It's horrible. It's bad. So now how do we respond to it? I don't need to try to figure out some grand conspiracy behind it. I need to look at it from this perspective. What is my responsibility as a follower of Christ to handle myself and act in the middle of a pandemic where over 700,000 Americans have died, over millions of people have died worldwide? What do I need to do to demonstrate love for God, love for others, love for my enemies, demonstrate that I believe life is sacred and there's sanctity to life? What can I do to demonstrate that I'm supposed to show submission to the government? What am I supposed to do? How am I supposed to act? I don't need to run around going, it's a conspiracy, it's a lie, it's all fake. Now, if I have clear evidence that proves something, clear evidence, not fraudulent information, horribly researched information, or questionable sources, then I may need to expose something. There is a time, but I don't have to try to explain everything with some grand, crazy conspiracy. People have a hard time acknowledging, well, God. Like, people don't want to read. They read Job. They want to blame Satan. No, Satan was simply used by God. He knew exactly what was going to happen, but he used Satan. All right, you want to do this? You go do it. God already knew how it was going to work. He set up the entire situation. He controlled the entire situation. If you read Job and blame Satan, you didn't read Job, because it's God who sets it up. It's God who initiates it, controls it, guides it, ends it, concludes it. It's all because God works all things together for his good purpose and will. So many times you'll see that Christians want to blame Satan, blame Satan, blame Satan. Well, Satan may be involved in something, but who created Satan? God. Who allows him to continue to exist? God. Who hasn't restrained him? God. Who can destroy him? God. So Satan is ultimately being utilized ultimately for God's purpose and glory. Now, people don't like that theologically, and they want to say, no, God. But then you create a situation where God is not in control. God didn't know. He's not in control. But if God is in control and he's working all things, then I always know the ultimate cause for everything. God is working all things according to his good pleasure and will. Do I understand it? Absolutely not. Does it bother me? Absolutely so. Do I may get bothered and bitter about some of it? I may struggle with that. But my only other option is to go create my own world and become my own God, and I can make my own rules. But I don't have that opportunity. This is where I am. I am in God's creation. I am created by God in his image, and that sovereign God works all things out. So I don't need to go find conspiracy theories to explain what is happening. I don't need to be bound by going, okay, look, this is why it's happening. This is why it happened. And Christians run around doing that, and you want to stop them and go, well, what about God? No. You can't blame God. We can't blame God. So again, let me go back to that survey. Few Americans blame God when bad things happen in their lives. It cannot be God. It's got to be people. It's got to be institutions. They just leave God out of it. Now, it could be the result of people. It could be the result of an institution. And those people are to be held accountable and to be condemned for doing wrong. There's no question about it. But yeah, at the same time, sometimes I think we look for an explanation when maybe the explanation isn't as conspiratorial as we would like to make it out to be. All right. I'm just going to read a little bit of this because I stopped before some of this. But the survey's finding that 80% of Americans think the suffering in the world comes from the actions of other people may not be the perfect antidote. The danger in this is when we turn our blame to others, we may see different levels of prejudice, bias, people harming others and groups different from themselves. This may be why we see so much tension towards one another in the U.S. You reject God being in charge, you're going to start finding people to blame, just like in ancient history, blaming the Jews. Nazi Germany, blaming the Jews. Half of Americans, the survey found, endorsed the idea that God chose not to stop the suffering in the world because it's a part of a larger plan. And 44% said Satan is responsible for most of the suffering in the world. Evangelical and Black Protestants were especially likely to take this position. Y'all blame Satan. Still, the survey's finding that 69% of Americans think suffering is mostly a result of the way society is structured. Now, according to this person, gave hope to theologian Emily M. Towns, dean of Vanderbilt University Divinity School. Over the last 20 years or so, I notice this is not so subtle change in which people say we need to look at what we do to each other more, said Towns. This is more the root of most suffering than God deciding to punish us in some way. You see that in many forms of liberation theologies when people are saying we need to ask why we're causing the suffering of others. So this theologian sees it as a great thing. Hey, see, instead of blaming God, we have to go, what are we doing and what can we do better? Well, I understand that, but the point is if you reject the sovereignty of God, we don't typically look to ourselves. We look to someone else to blame. So it's not as freeing. See, this theologian thinks, oh, see, it's going to make people look to themselves and say, what are we doing to cause suffering? No, no, no. People don't look to themselves to go, what am I doing to cause suffering? They look to them and go, they're the ones causing it. They're the one. It's the elites. It's Bill Gates. It's Joe Biden. It's the Democrats. It's them. They're causing all of it. And then you have to go, but wait a minute, who put them in charge? God put them in charge. God gave them authority. See, when you look at it from a theological perspective of God's sovereignty, I don't need to come up with all of these crazy conspiracy theories because I've already got an ultimate reason for everything, God. Now, my question is, okay, I may not understand why God did this. I may not understand, what am I to do in the midst of it? I don't need a conspiracy theory to explain it. I need to know what I need to do in the midst of it. Now, I'm not saying we don't pay attention and go, wait a minute. That's wrong over there. But we do so based off fact, not made up fiction, since simply to give us some sense of certainty in the midst of uncertainty. We already have certainty. God works all things according to his counsel, his will, his pleasure. That's Christianity 101. Has the rejection of God's sovereignty theologically made the church vulnerable for conspiracy theories? I will say yes. Most of you will probably say no, but I am going to stick by that perspective as of now. I'm still thinking it through. I still got to process it all. But when I found that according to those who've studied conspiracy theories, they've dedicated their lives to studying ancient conspiracy theories, and that the origin of conspiracy theories is an abhorrence of believing that something is happening by fate, that just bad things happen. They can't tolerate that. Well, then I move that over to the Christian world. Well, why are we looking for explanations when we already know the explanation? I know that raised lots of theological issues right there. That's going to be very unpopular, but I'll lay it before you, and I'll be more than happy to hear your thoughts and perspective. You can email me at newsif@yahoo.com, newsif@yahoo.com. All right, there. That I took longer than I wanted it to take, so I didn't get time to go through this, all of the statistics in this study. I didn't get a chance to go through all of them. But it's just interesting how many of the theologian in it thinks it's a good thing. Hey, they don't blame God. That's wonderful. So they'll take responsibility for themselves. No, they won't. They'll blame other people and come up with a conspiracy theory because they don't see God being directly involved in everything. But again, I tend to always find myself at odds with everyone. So, well, there you have it. newsif@yahoo.com. Can't wait to hear your thoughts and perspective on this very, I think, interesting conversation. And a very important one is we try to figure out why the church has been completely corrupted, co-opted, and hijacked by conspiratorial thinking. All right, I'll stop right there. Everyone have a great day. I'll be back on the air soon. God bless.